Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Chocolate Lady 64, and I'm hoping everyone is having a great week. It is almost over with. One more day, and it's done. The weekend comes in. I know a lot of people have been dealing with the ups and downs of the weather, but I'm hoping everyone is still well, regardless. Okay. While we're waiting for, I call him Mr., and actually he is a pastor. So please, I hope he doesn't think I'm being disrespectful when I do not say a pastor, but he is Pastor Andrew Tate. I'm right now waiting for him to call in. I'm hoping he's listening. While we're waiting for him to come in, let's catch up on some news. First of all, we know next week is Valentine's Day, so I'm hoping everyone is prepared for Valentine's Day, okay? And the reason why I say that is because it's time for you to show your love. You should show your love every day regardless. But Valentine's Day is a little bit special, and I don't know why they get love out of a Valentine's Day massacre. I think that's what happened on that day. I don't know. But anyway, from hate comes love, you know. So I'm hoping you guys are, let's see something here. I hope you guys are going to celebrate it correctly. And if you don't have a loved one, get one. I guess that's what I want to say. But if you don't have one, that's fine. Love yourself. Give yourself a present. I'm going to let you guys listen to a little bit of music for right now until I get this going. I hope you didn't forget. Oh, all right. Here we go.
Hello?
Yes. Good evening, Pastor Andrew Tate. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great.
Good, good, good. So, you almost had me scared there for a minute.
Oh, no, no. I just thought I forgot.
Yeah, I thought you forgot. Yeah.
No, I was just had to preach tonight, so I was just getting back.
Oh, I'm sorry. You did tell me you had something to do.
Oh no,
you did tell me you had. Okay. Good. Everything went well.
Everything went well.
Great. Okay. First of all, everybody doesn't know who you are. So I want you to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself before I start drilling you, okay?
All right. My name is Andrew Tate III. I'm 42 years old. I've been married to my wife. Been married for 21 years. I'm an ordained minister, minister of music or music director. I'm also a drama director at my church. I reside in Jacksonville, Florida. I have three daughters. And then also I'm an author, too. And so I'm originally born in Joliet, Illinois. That's a suburb of Chicago, Illinois. And now I'm just, like saying, I reside in Jacksonville, Florida, and also the owner of my own production company, AMG Productions.
Okay. All right, then. All right. Now, Can I say Mr.? Because, no, let me say it correctly. Pastor Tate.
Or you, or right? You can call me Andrew. That's fine.
Okay. Okay. Andrew, you just mentioned that you, you're married and you have three kids. Mm-hmm. My question is to you, is, you know, Valentine's Day is coming up, right?
Right.
Okay. Now, as a happily married man and a minister, what is your secret to a good marriage?
Well, the first thing is first of all, you got to have God in your life. That's first and foremost. And I believe that in using the Bible as a standard, then that gives you something to be accountable to. And then going into marriage is, and what a lot of people don't understand, going into marriage takes a lot of work. Going in with the mindset, well, with me, per se, going into it was divorce was never an option. Then coming from not really having an example of people staying together and throughout my family, I wanted to change change things around and be one of the ones who get married and stay married to the same one.
Okay. Good answer. I like that. I wish a lot of people could hear that and really understand the concept of not getting a divorce. And another thing is, too, is that you have to know who you're married to.
Right.
Okay.
And so a lot of times with me and my wife is what we like to do as we got older and mature, we really just spend time together and never really take the laughter, you know, out of the marriage. Being able to get together and laugh together. And then one practice that we've picked up over the past few years is every 3 months we'll take a weekend and pull away from everything and where it's just us two.
Oh, that's so awesome.
And so we're continually getting to know each other and keeping the romance in the relationship. And too many times I see people, they lose the romance side of it. And then romance is more than just sex. Just being together, just sitting together, talking. That's romantic. So I believe romance starts long before you ever reach the bed.
Exactly. Yes. That's so true. It's a form of, I don't want to use the word, but it is a form of verbal foreplay, actually. It's to get
right.
to know each other, laugh, have a good time, get the mood set up before you even get to the bedroom, you know. Yeah,
right.
You are so correct with that. That is so true. That is so true. So what are you going to do for Valentine's Day? I know it's going to be a surprise.
Haven't said anything really in the motion yet. I'm still going through some different ideas, but it's going to be something real nice.
Mm-hmm.
And surprise, I never know she may listen to this, so I don't want to let her in. Plus, she's sitting right next to me, so I can't. hey, let me get out the bag.
You can't tell me. Okay, I understand. You can't tell me. Well, good evening, Mrs. Tate. How are you, ma'am?
Hey, Mr. How are you, ma'am? She said hello.
Okay. Now, let's get down to the real questions here. I just thought that I would throw that out at you since Valentine's Day is coming up. Now, tell me, what is a normal day for you with your production company? What makes you want to do this?
A normal day with the production company? A&T is really right now in its infancy stages.
Okay.
Like I said, last year we just really started the company. As I shared before, I didn't even know I had the gift to write until maybe 4 or 5 years ago. Like I said, we have a drama department in our church, and I was in the production, and then one the person that was over the production quit during the middle of the play. And so there was no one really to take over but me. Reluctantly, I agreed to it, and then at that point, you know, I just started beginning to get things to write about. And through our drama production team, was formed, which was called Unity Productions. I've written 6 plays to date, and then so I said, well, maybe I could do this. You know, that's why I started watching the Tyler Perry plays, and many different other people who does play. And I'm like, well, I can do this too. And so me and my wife, we decided to start AMT Productions, which the AMT stands for Andrew and Michelle Tate. And we started it, and we're looking forward to really just doing things. We have a fan base. Every play that I do now, because I do normally two plays at my church twice a year, and I do one for Easter and one for around August, and we're generating 400 to 500 people for every production that we do.
So now
we're going to take this on the road. Eventually looking in September to really just take it out and really let more people to a wider audience. We've also added youth to our production team, to our productions. And so it's really getting ready to take off, and we're excited about it, and things are really going to be great.
It sounds like it's exciting. You know what? That is what I've always wanted. As a little girl, I've always wanted my own drama team and to be able to do exactly what you're doing. It's just that my whole mindset went in a whole different direction, so I kind of laid off of that department of actually trying to start my own production company. I would love to do that. That's always been a heartfelt dream of mine because I grew up doing stage. I mean, as a little girl, Mom pushed us up on the plays for the school and all that, and I was like the only one that really stuck to it and kept writing and doing my little things. Everybody else went their own way, but I just never went in that direction. I mean, I don't know. You know how you have a lot of stuff going on in your head and you want to do this, you want to do that? Well, I decided to go in the other direction instead of doing that. Eventually, I want to still do it. I'm not too old to do it, so eventually I really want to do that. That would be so awesome. Now, tell me this. What are most of the struggles that you face with your company at times? You know, things that come up that you're not expecting to come up. How do you handle those things?
Well, to try to the best thing I'm trying to do now is really prioritize my day. And right now, what I'm doing is really spending most of the time. I spend a lot of late nights up doing the writing, because the best time to do it is once you get home and everybody's going to bed.
Exactly.
And then that's when you have your quiet time. And one of the things that I try to do is I try to feel the pulse of society and see what's going on in society, what issues are affecting our communities, and that's what I try to write towards. I just did one. I read an article probably a few months ago, and where they were saying the new face of HIV/AIDS is the African American female. And
yes, so, exactly.
And I like to target our young people, because sometimes our young people, our youth, can be kind of promiscuous. And so I just did a play called I Didn't Think It Could Happen to Me. And it really dealt with young people and really some of the choices that they made. And I wanted to show that, you know, the choices that you make not only affect you, but affect those who love you. And so it came out to where one of the young girls had sex for the first time, and she ended up contracting the virus. And then because her sister was affected by it, because she introduced her to the guy, she committed suicide. So those are some of the issues that I wanted to tackle dealing with our youth. So I try to find out what's going on. I get inspired by, you know, headlines, you know, what's going on, what's the issues that's affecting, and really not just our community, but people in general. And so I target my plays in those different areas. Thank you. Okay, did I lose you?
We got lost somewhere. I don't know what happened.
Oh.
But it allowed me to call back in to you, so I don't know. I'm sorry. Go ahead and finish. I apologize for that.
Okay, and like I said, I'll try to use those things that are affecting our communities, and whether it's young or old, and really dealing with relationships that really can affect our community. Then just not just that, but really people in general.
Okay, very interesting. You seem to keep yourself very busy. What about, how do you handle your time between family and production? I know you said you do it twice a year, right?
That's still a challenge. But so whenever I get free time, you know, I like to, like to do things with the family. And so it's really challenged by, you know, by doing ministry and doing the production. And so, but the biggest thing is my wife, she teams with me with a lot of what I do. So.
Uh-huh.
So we spend a lot. Therefore, we spend a lot of time together on a daily basis, and so that's what keeps the relationship strong. But then there come those times when, you know, she said, "All right, okay, you gotta slow down so we can do something." And then even with my children, so we try yearly to go on a family vacation and do family trips. So in those times, because it's hard, because they have to share me with a lot of people, and so hard trying to balance all of that out, but some kind of way we try to work it out.
Okay, you just answered my next question, but that's all right. Okay, because you did answer the question, and I know it's probably hard. And when you're so obsessed with trying to get this product out, it's like you really don't want to be dealing with all this extra stuff. You just want to stay focused on that one project, trying to get it out, getting it produced, getting it on stage, getting the people together. All the other stuff you really don't. And it's good that your wife is with you, because she can kind of balance you, like, hold up, stop. You need to look at us now, because you're getting way out there. And it's good that she's there for you. And it's the same if it was a husband doing it for the wife. It's good to have that back, that support there. Because sometimes you can do things alone, but it's so much easier when you can just, you know, kind of lean back and say, okay, baby, you go ahead. You got it now. And that's so much, that's what is so good about having that support system. And everybody don't have that, you know what I'm saying? So I think married people should really feel blessed to have another person there with them that has the same dreams and aspirations as they do in order for them to do what they're doing. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And the biggest thing is she where she keeps me balanced, even though she says sometimes I don't listen to her, but her role in the company is she's my my stage manager, and so basically she leaves all the writing, the directing, and the producing to me, and then what I have in my vision, she's there to make it happen.
Exactly. Okay.
And then we have a team around us to where everything is not really on us. So majority of we share the wealth, and then therefore we can have a successful product.
And that's good. That's why I said it's so good to be with somebody, especially when you're running a business. It is so good to have that backup. Oh, it's so good to have that backup. Now, do you accept other writers' plays? Do people send you their plays, and do you read them? Do you be interested, or do you only do your own?
Yes, I also do. As a matter of fact, a few months ago, I just helped a young lady direct one of her plays, and it was a really good play. So I took time out to help her, and so it really worked out really well. And then it was an experience for me also, because one thing I believe in helping people bring their dreams to pass also. You know, it's not just about me, but if I know someone who's trying to go in the same direction that I'm going, and any help that I can lead, that I can lend, you know, I'm willing to do that, because I believe if we're in a relationship and you're trying to do something and I know how to do it, then why should I
make you go find it on your own when we can do this thing together. And I believe if we learn that, we can be more successful as a people. If we learn, hey, I know how to do that. You know, hey, I got time. Let me lend you my resources. Then that makes everybody stronger.
And you know what? But that's what I was talking to my last interviewer. I was asking her the same thing. I cannot understand why do we have a gift to help other people out and we choose not to. If I have any way, and I guess that's one of my downfalls as a person, I love helping people. I love if there's anything I can do for you, if there's any research you need to be done, I'm finding things and I'm always giving that information out. Lots of people like us, and I say us, and I'm talking about as African Americans, we want to hold on to all the things that God gave you. You didn't get it on your own. God gave you those gifts and those ways of doing things, and you sit there and you hold it to yourself and you don't share it with others, and you don't understand how you're cutting off your blessings when you don't share, because it's not for you to keep. It's for you to give and to share with other people. I love giving, helping people as much as I can. I do. I've helped so many people that I've helped myself into trouble. I'll put it to you like that. Because that's just something I like to do. And it's nothing wrong with sharing information. That's what it's out there for. It's nothing wrong with sharing information. And if we could just get over that, you know, it would be so much better for all. I think all of us could win. All parts of our society can win if we would just share the information. And don't always have your hands out waiting for something to come back all the time. You know what I'm saying? But you have people like that, you know. Oh, I can't help you because I don't know if I can get this, and I don't know. It's not about that. It's not yours anyway. To be honest with you, it don't really belong to you. It belongs to God. Everything here belongs to God. So you don't own it anyway. But we have a habit of, you know, grabbing all this stuff and holding on to it. And that just burns me up with us. I really do. I really wish you were down here. I hate that you live in Jacksonville, Florida. If you were here, I would be your wife's left hand. I'll be honest with you, because I love what you do, because that's exactly what I always wanted to do. And I say that because it's true. And to actually do it, oh, man, that would be so awesome. Because I've written a couple of plays. Me and a girlfriend of mine written a play. We want somebody to do it. She likes the writing part of it. She don't want to do the production part. I like to do the production part because I've done it before. And we've been trying to find somebody that would be interested in doing it. But we don't know. We don't know which way that one's going to go. We wrote this play called The Unshed Tears. And it's about a young lady who has a sickness that nobody, her family doesn't know. And she has a battle with her mom. And at the end, something happens to her and everybody realizes how important she really was to them. So we wrote that one. Then I used to be with the Kansas City Players in Kansas City, Kansas, so I got an opportunity to do a lot of plays with them. So it's not like it's not in my blood. It's just that I've decided to go another way right now. But I really wish you were down here because you could help out so much. Because what happens is here, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Can you? Okay. The thing is here, they have a group that does play, but that's just that group. You understand what I'm saying? They don't spread the wealth a little bit. So we gave our play to someone to read, and we haven't heard back from them. And that's probably about 6 or 7, 8 months ago. So we're still waiting to see what the result was. And I think it's because we're so anxious to get it done or to get somebody who wants to do it. And we haven't had that opportunity yet, so we kind of moved on to something different.
You never know what God may be doing, and He may have linked us up for a reason.
Exactly. That's what I say. Hopefully, I can come down here and see one of your plays. That would be awesome. And I was looking at your website. I love your website. It is awesome. I like that. It's so cute.
Yeah, one of my friends did that for me for free.
Oh,
he believes in what I was doing, and so that was his way of sewing into the company.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. It's cute. Okay, I'm going on my rant. Let me stop. Now, let me ask you this. You answer the question that you said that you go on the road. You don't go on the road just yet. You haven't started going on the road yet, right?
Right.
Okay. When are you planning on doing that?
Well, we're looking at in September. We're going to do our first show here in Jacksonville in one of the local theaters, and then I'm looking at going to Atlanta, and then we're looking to Charlotte, Baltimore, and Dallas.
Okay.
We haven't had any dates set yet, but those are the plans that we're negotiating now, and so we really want to get this out. And one of the plays is called Forgive and Live Again. And it's a really nice play. Deals with the relationships.
Okay. Okay. Now, you didn't say nothing about Louisiana.
Okay. Well, hey, like I said, you know, we'll look forward to coming to Louisiana. Hey, there ain't nothing but learning.
I'm like, I'm listening to Dally. I mean, you going totally way just past Louisiana. I'm like, okay, you want to Dallas and Baltimore? Okay, you didn't even say nothing about I'm in Louisiana, okay?
Well, we'll keep that on our schedule, and then we'll keep you in mind and have you set it up. You'll be our liaison, and we'll bring it to New Orleans.
Not New Orleans. I don't live in New Orleans.
Oh, okay. Wherever you're from, we'll bring it there.
Oh, okay. You'll bring it. Most of the time, that's all right, because people either say, they're going to say either New Orleans or Shreveport. Those are two main places that they know. They don't know any other part of Louisiana, but those are two main places, so I'm used to that. I'm used to that. Now, let's see. Let's talk about your book.
Okay.
And I'm messing with you right here. Since I don't have a copy, tell me, what was your inspiration behind writing your book?
Well, my inspiration on the book was twofold. What made me interested in writing the book was one day I was at home and my daughter was reading a book from Eric Jerome Dickey. And I read it, and it was interesting, but some of the language I just didn't wasn't too fond of. And so I said, well, maybe I could write a book. You know, something had been on my heart to write a book. And I could do maybe a clean version with the same quality, just without all of the language. And so I had just written a play, like the play I was telling you about, Forgive and Live Again. That's the name of the book. It's based on the plays that I wrote. And basically the synopsis of the book is, have a young lady who's an executive. Met a guy, he had dreams and visions, so she helped him support his dream to become a comedian. And so she helped him and kept him get started, and he got going. Then once he rolled up the ladder and became successful, then who he really was came out. You know, because I'm a firm believer that money doesn't change people, but it allows you to be more of who you really are.
Exactly.
And so he started... So he started abusing her, dogging around, got caught up in the limelight. And this drove her on the brink of, you know, from the abuse and from the things that he was doing, the infidelity. She ended up abusing drugs, got into alcohol, and she really almost destroyed herself.
Uh-huh.
And one of her friends did an intervention and explained that she had to learn how to first of all forgive herself for allowing herself to be put in that position. And then she had to learn how to forgive him in order to move on with her life. And so I did it, and I kind of gave it a twist to it because it has really four main characters. And her husband ended up having a baby outside of the marriage. And so in this, she had to learn how to forgive herself and forgive him. But then she ended up leaving him, divorcing him. And then on the flip side, the woman, because normally when the man cheats, in most cases, the woman is the one who forgives and keeps him. And so then I flipped it on the other side with the woman who was cheating, who was married too, her husband stayed with her.
Mm-hmm.
And so And so it was just something that really, and I've seen that because I grew up around predominantly all women, and I've seen so many of them. Then I have all daughters, too. And I've seen them go through these hardships with men and let them know that you don't have to stay in a abusive relationship. There is a way out, but in order to do that, you have to learn how to forgive in order to move on with your life. Because so many times I see women, or and men for that matter, who can see a person, and as soon as they hear their name or they see them, then they go back and relive the experience again. Then you haven't really forgiven that person. Because if you've truly forgiven a person, you ought to be able to hear their name, see them, and it don't bother you. And so my message was, you have to learn how to be able to forgive, get over it, move on, and go forward from there.
And people don't realize, too, which when you forgive, you're opening up the passageway for you to continue to live your life in a healthy mental capacity, emotional capacity, opposed to holding all that mess and the baggages, you know, in you, and then every relationship you get in, you're carrying that baggage around with you, and you're never happy, you know. So forgiveness has a lot to do with that, clearing up everything and starting from scratch.
Right.
And I know they say that you never can forget, but you're supposed to be able to forgive if you can't do anything else. Forgive.
Excuse me. Because so it's not helpful to forget. Because if you forget, then you'll go down that same road again.
Exactly. That sounds like a real interesting book. I like that. Now, tell me this. When you go out, do you do a lot of book signings?
I've done a few, they've come out pretty well. And a lot of times I'm really just getting into this. Because, like I said, ministry keeps me down. I do a lot of things in ministry. And so now I'm to the point where I can really pull away from it some and really just work on my vision.
Okay. Because I was going to ask a question. Like, some people are still trying to figure out. Excuse me, I'm sorry. Some people are still trying to work out that part of, you know, after the finished product is done, how do I market it? How do I get it out to my list or my readers? How do I get it out to them? And part of that, I know, is marketing.
Right. Well, with me being self-published, a lot of the work ends up on you. So one thing that I did is I sent out, because you have certain companies, you can search the net for companies that do book reviews, and they'll review your book. Like for Amazon is one of the ways. Barnes and Noble's online site, I'll have the book on there, and then going to different bookstores and just asking. You can do it either consignment, where you would to place so many, either they could buy the books or they could just put them in there, and then they'll get a percentage of every sale that you do. And then your families and friends. Facebook is also a good tool. I've generated quite a few sales marketing for Facebook, and use all the technology tips that you can that's available to you. And these are things that's free. You can advertise for free on Facebook. And so those different areas, and then there's a list of also book clubs. Get books in those hands, and then those are things that you can do on your own on a minor scale in order to get your book out. Because all it takes is one person to read it and like it, and then with people that you know, have them go out on I have some go out on Amazon to do a review on it, and then that brings you, the more reviews you have, that brings you up the ladder. So then when the search engine comes out, then your book is one of the first ones that'll pop up.
Exactly. Now, have you put your book in the library yet?
Yes, my book is in the library. As a matter of fact, I had a friend who was in Kentucky, and went to the bookstore and to the library, and my book was in there.
So it
takes a lot of work. Just have to be steadfast in it and really just work at it.
I know. It's hard when you're doing a lot of other things, like you said before, because, like, with mine, what I did was I picked six people that I know, and I sent them a free copy of the book, and I actually had them review the book. And I took their feedback, and that's what made me keep generating and getting the book out. Then I had a book launching party, which really brung in some real good. I mean, people were coming, even when I was closing the party down. People will come in to buy the book. So it does help, but it just is a lot of extra work when you're doing other things. And I kind of slacked off because I just finished my second book, sort of like the one I just wrote. I've written books before. I just never was diligent. I didn't stick to where I really would push them. But these two I did push, and I'm in the process of getting one edited now. And once it's finished editing, I'm not going to do another book launching party. I'm just going to put it out there. It's in Amazon. You know, you have it in Kindle. Have you had the book put in Kindle yet, ebook?
No, not yet. Like I said, I'm like you. You know, I've been involved in so much other stuff. I haven't really been a big focus on that.
Yeah, well, Amazon has it. If you get a chance to, Amazon did mine for me. It e-booked mine for me. All I had to do was upload it, and it went on and put it on there for me. But I don't know if I'm going to do the second book like that. They're saying e-books is what it's about now. So that's probably something people who's listening, if you're writing, a self-publisher or whatever, to probably gear toward a lot of e-books, making sure your book is able to be transferred into the e-book, because they're saying that's what people are doing. Now, are you planning on writing another book?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I'm in the process of writing a book now on the play that I did. I didn't think it could happen to me. And that's dealing with the youth. And I really want to get that in the hands of young people to make better decisions. You know, your life is at stake, and all it takes is one mistake, and it affects the rest of your life.
Rest of your life. You're right. You are so right. Let's see. Now, tell me this. Tell me, what is your ultimate goal for your ministry and your production company? What do you want out of this whole thing when it's all said and done? And you can sit back and relax. What do you want your ultimate goal to be?
Well, I look at them both as one and the same, because I believe that my company is going to is a ministry within itself, and my ultimate goal is to really reach people with the love of God and know Christ, and really use AMT Productions as an avenue to reach people who would never come to a traditional church building, and also use it as a tool to bring a positive message, to have a positive change and impact on people's lives. When people come see my production, I want them to be able to see what issues they may have had in their lives, and to actually deal with it, and then come out a better person. And then I also want to use my business as one of my goals is to give people. I believe that we have a lot of talented people out there who are looking into, even like such as yourself, who has the ability to write, produce, and to present them with an opportunity to be able to showcase their gifts. Everybody is not going to be able to be in a Tyler Perry play, but they're talented, and they're just as gifted as even some of the people who he chooses or who has the opportunity, and to be able to afford people that opportunity to be able to use, and then for our youth to use theater as a way of creative expression, because they're going to express themselves in any kind of either way, but to be able to use that as a form to be able to act, to be able to produce, to maybe start their own company. So I really want to trailblaze it as a way to give people hope and let you know you're never too young, you're never too old to be able to follow your dreams and make your dreams come to pass. And so if I can be a catalyst to bring that about, then I would have done my assignment.
Yeah, that is awesome. I mean, that is really, really awesome. Tell me this. We're talking Black History Month, you know. What do you have to say to our listeners? How do you feel about Black history? I mean, should we be celebrating Black history only in February, or should we be celebrating Black history every day? What do you think?
I think that that's something that should be taught every day, because we have a rich heritage, and we have and I believe and we say Black history, but really it's almost American history.
Exactly.
Because some of the same things that we experience now were really done by Black people, and so
mm-hmm.
we got to reteach pride of who we are, especially to our young people, and let them know that there were sacrifices made for us to have the opportunity that we have now, and take advantage of it, and not just sit around and do nothing with the opportunity that was afforded to you, but use that as fuel to make your life better and understand where we've come from, because you can't appreciate where we're going until we first understand where we come from. And when we learn that, and then we'll be more appreciative of the conveniences and the lifestyle that we have, that we're afforded now, to be able to
mm-hmm.
make ourselves better. And then bring the unity back amongst our people. Because if we ever get unified again, there's nothing that's impossible to us.
Exactly. I don't know what happened. I don't know why we're so disconnected from each other. I don't know. And it's crazy, and I say this, and this is only from my personal experience. Being prior military, I had the opportunity to meet so many different cultures and people. I've had the opportunity to meet so many different people from all over the place. And I find myself bonding more with them than I did my own people. And I could not understand. I could hang out with people like, what are you doing with them? Because it was so comfortable. And it's us. It's not them all the time. It's us. We have a problem with ourselves. We self-hate ourselves to the point where it's easy for us to disconnect from our own people. And I don't understand that. And we should be, out of all the races, we should be the most bonded race there is. But it's just so different. I don't understand. And it seems like, the older we get, the more time comes in, the more distance we become. And we start putting ourselves in certain classes. You know, you're here, I'm there, and I can't tell you anything because, you're not my kind in that sense. And I'm looking at you and me, and you're the same color, so what do you mean I'm not your kind? And, and then you start separating us and you start making us feel isolated, and that's where a lot of the self-hatred comes from. And that comes with our kids. Our kids are the same way. Our kids are the same way. We're teaching our kids to be just like we are, and it's so sad. So what do you think we can do to bring that back?
I think a lot of what we can do is, and a lot of times we've gotten away from really family and really if we ever can get back to that and being prideful of who we are and bringing the family back together, because sometimes we're so focused on our careers that we're not teaching our children, what it is that we had to go through coming up, and and the obstacles that we had to come over to get to where we are. And a lot of things we've become too materialistic.
We're
working to have this and to have that, and we've really lost focus of what really matters the most, because you can have material things, they come and go. But exactly. National pride and being proud of who we are as a people, that has been the biggest obstacle or the biggest thing that's gone wrong. And then there's we need us as, and I can say this because I'm one, and we need our black men to step back up, to start reclaiming their role, their families, their children, and get out the streets and come home and be with your wife, be with your children, because if we don't teach them, then others will teach them.
Exactly. You remind me, I wrote a poem called I Want My Strong Black Man Back. And the result was he's in the prisons. I can't get to him because he's locked up. And he's forgotten about everything that he fought, what we fought for as a man and wife or as a sister and a brother together to make us where we're at. The end result is he's in prison. I'm still out here by myself. I want my strong black man back. You know, and it's true. They have. It's like they've given up. And I guess because they feel like they've been fighting a fight for so long, you know, oh, man, I'm not going to do this no more. They give up on the family. They give up on the kids, you know. And then they learn to regret that when they get older. They regret that because there's nobody there to help you because you've given up on them long time ago. And then some of them are meeting them in prison. You know, I got my son right here with me in prison, you know. So, man, I got my family right here, man. You know, they have that mentality because they stepped away. And guess what? The kid followed you. You thought you got rid of the kid, but guess what? He's right there with you. You know, and I don't know. I'm not going to male bash. I just don't understand men nowadays. It's amazing to me.
Well, it's a mindset. And
yeah.
And because I was this thing even with my dad, and I was one that would like to learn from others' mistakes. Like I said, my dad was in the house, but he wasn't in the house. And
exactly.
So when I grew up, I didn't want, and I knew how it felt me and my dad, we have an awesome relationship now, but those things hurt when I was playing basketball in high school and my dad never came to a game, ran track and never came to a game. So once I grew up, I said, I don't want my children to experience what I had to go through. So
exactly.
I want my girls to see me loving their mother.
Mm-hmm.
Loving on her, treating her right, not cussing her out, not dogging her out, but loving her and being home. Come home every night. Hey, I wash dishes. I clean up the house. And I work because I want them to show them an example of, one, a God-fearing man who loves his family and will do whatever to make sure they're taken care of. Because 9 times out of 10, most girls choose a man just like their father.
Exactly.
And so I want to be an example. No, get you a man that's going to open the door for you. And that's showing the pride of who we are because we are known to take care of our own. And somehow we've gotten away from that. And even through the music, through the hip-hop music, these images that they portray is, you know, and I heard something another person from another race told me, and it really hit me. He said, African hip-hop music is the only, black people are the only culture who degrade their women in their music. And so I started to look at that, and I said, you know
that's
what?
True.
That's true. And it kind of hurt me, so I said, well, I need to do something that's going to change this persona of who we are. And so I want, and I can't do it on a national stage, but I can do it in my house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I want to show my girls, hey, you know, black men are good. They're, I'm not saying all are bad, but you got some good ones out there, but you don't see that or hear about that in the media. And so we do it on the local level, then that can spread throughout.
Hey, but you know what, too, with the young girls, what I've noticed with girls that I've dealt with, they like that, what they call them, roughnecks.
Right.
Yeah. They flock to those type of guys. They want those guys that don't want to hold a job. They want those guys that disrespect them. They want those guys who beat on them. And that just, that kind of misses me because, and I think a lot has to do with society. Society glamorizes these thugs, these roughneck thugs or whatever you want to call them. And when they glamorize them, that's what the girls flock to. Instead of getting a respectable man, that's a man that's, they think those kind of men are boring. I want me a man that, you know, can kick my tail or whatever. You know, they just, I don't understand. And you try to instill in them, you know, the values of being respectable towards yourself, having the man have to respect you if he come to you, he needs to come to you with respect. They don't get that. And I'm not saying all young women. I'm not saying all young girls, because there's a lot of girls who know what they want and they go after it. And they get the respectful guys, but there's a lot of them who don't. They don't.
Right.
I mean, they want that. They want that rough guy, and I don't get it. He can't speak English. I mean, he can't write his name, but he's cute.
Right.
He has nothing about him that's interesting. But to her, you know, he's the world. And I don't know.
And then that goes back to us as men being role models, and not let athletes be our role models, but let our dads be our role models, and get our young men start teaching our young men again to respect our women.
Exactly.
But the thing is, if we're buying their music, then we're almost saying that, okay, it's okay to do that.
Exactly.
And I believe that repetition forms a reputation. So if we repeatedly support it, then that's going to form a reputation, and then that's what they'll go after. But if we teach it, when I was coming up, I better not disrespect the lady. You know, I get my head tore off. But we've gotten away from that, and that's what's been the downside to us as a people. But if we ever get back to it and get some men who say that, you know, enough is enough, let's build, because, you know, the Asians, they're building each other, the Caucasians are building each other, and if we ever get that concept where we can build each other, help each other out, and put our heads together and put our resources together, there's nothing that we can't accomplish together, and everybody can be successful. So I'm not just satisfied with me being successful alone, but I care about, you know, you being successful and your family being successful, then everybody doing what they're supposed to do. And then that's what will bring the pride back to our communities.
Exactly. You are so right about that. And I think we're the only race that does what we do. I don't think there's other races that act the way and disconnect themselves from each other. I mean, everybody, basically, most of the other races actually help each other, like you were saying earlier. They help each other to get to that next level. But it's sad, and it's not all over the place. It's just certain places that we have that problem with. Because I think with us being a strong people, I always say that about us, we are very strong people, and we've survived so much stuff. And why are we like that? We should want to be more together than apart. But then, too, they say we have, like, what you call the slave mentality.
Right.
And that hurts us as a people, too, because a lot of us, you know, I'm living proof here being in Louisiana, how a lot of us haven't gotten away from the old way of doing things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard. It's generational is what I want to say. And, you know, they don't want, if you're a successful person, they don't want to see you being successful because, you know what, in their mind, you're not allowed to be that way because they've been taught that we're low on the totem pole and that's where we belong and you're not supposed to do all these good things and these nice things, you know. And the mentality is there, and they call that a slave mentality, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's another way we keep each other down.
Right. And like you say, you know, and I went to a forum just the other week, and they were talking about colorism and how sometimes there's discrimination within a race. And me being dark-skinned, when I was coming up, I used to hate being dark-skinned because I was called Tar Baby. I was black as tar, and this, that, and the other. Because my mom, my mother is light skinned, and my dad is real dark. And I look just like my dad. And I tell my mom, I'm like, Mom, I don't want to be dark. I want to be light like you. And that's because I was being torn down amongst my own people. But now, hey, I love it. Because we say black is what is what's happening.
I know. Believe me, I know. I'm black. I know because I did the same thing. I had that same problem. I felt so out of place because everybody called me Blackie and Darky and all that because I was the darkest one in my family.
Right.
And then I have a sister that's light-skinned. Believe it or not, we even deal with it now within ourselves. People see me and my sister together. She's lighter than me. And y'all are sisters? And I have to catch myself because I get kind of, you know, I can get a little ghetto if I need to. I like, okay, I'm not going to answer that. I'm not going to go there with them. But they call, like, one person calls me dark and calls my sister light. You know, day. That's what he says, day and night. That's what he calls us. And I let him get away with it because, you know, he thinks it's cute. That's fine. But inside, you know, I'm still dealing with my little self-esteem problem with me being dark. And I got this person saying this to me, you know, yeah, you're the good one and she's the bad one. I'm the one who got the mouth and she's the quiet one. But if you get her riled up, she's going to go after you too. And it's like people see that and they don't want to see that we're sisters, you know, because... And then she turns around and two girls, one of her daughters are dark-skinned, one of them light-skinned. And they come from the same family, but that's just how some of the kids in our family are. That's how we are. But I dealt with it. I don't know anybody else, but I know I dealt with it badly. I mean, I thought that my color was the worst thing ever happened. Mom, why did you even have me? You know what I'm saying? Because I got picked on so much about my color. And then it does make you have a self-hatred about yourself, which is bad. And then you learn that black is beautiful. And the reason why they talk about it is because they fear the dark-skinned African-American. They fear us. They fear us more. We're more a threat to them than the light-skinned ones are. I don't know why, but that's true. We're more. Right. They're more scared of us than they are. And I guess that's why they pick on us so much, I guess.
Right. It just came to the fact where I just had to learn to love who God made me.
Oh, yes, definitely, definitely. We are beautiful. Blacker we get, the beautiful we get, you know.
Right.
So it don't bother me as much as it used to, but even as a grown woman, you know, and, you know, in my own life, I still, you know, have to deal with that. You know, people look at you like, oh, my God, you know, you're dark. Yeah, what's wrong with that? And just even like with me talking. When people hear me talk and they see my face, you know, they're like surprised. It's a darkie.
Right.
He's actually talking. I think it's funny. But I like to fool them like that because, you know, you never know. Just because I'm dark-skinned, it doesn't mean that there's something wrong with me. But some people have that mentality. They think that, you know, that you're not supposed to be intelligent. We're not supposed to be able to read or write or whatever. You have people with that same mentality to this day, you know.
Right.
And I deal with it right here in Louisiana. I deal with it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So we just have to love who we are and realize and like I said, it's not the outside that matters.
It's what's on the inside. What's on the inside? Well, Mr. Tate, I love this conversation we had tonight. I want to thank you and your wife for your time.
And it was my pleasure.
Thank you very much. And I really want to get back with you. So I'm going to keep kicking on you on Facebook, okay, so that maybe one day we can meet up and do something together.
Sure. I'll look forward to it.
Okay. Thank you again. You have a blessed night.
Okay, you too.
And bye-bye. Bye-bye.